Okay, we move to the fourth case of the morning, which is appeal number 07-1493, Klein v. DuPay Corporation. Ms. Krantz.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Michelle Krantz, and I do represent the plaintiff appellants in this case, Thomas Mitchell Klein and his wife, Annie Rice, in this products liability cause of action against DePue Incorporated et al. Your Honors, there are two specific questions we are asking you to take under consideration today. First, whether the law of the home state of the appellants, that being North Carolina, with its six-year statute of repose, or the law of the home state of appellees, Indiana, with its 10-year statute of repose, should apply to this case at bar. Should this Court indeed determine that the choice of law in this case is North Carolina, then we'd ask the Court to undertake a second consideration, which is whether the pronouncements of the North Carolina Supreme Court and the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, finding that there is a disease exception to the North Carolina statute of repose for product liability, should apply to the case at bar. Your Honors, this matter is before this Court on a grant of summary judgment in favor of the defendants. Therefore, this Court has an opportunity to make a de novo review of this particular case. Should it please the Court, Your Honors, there are three specific facts that would help guide as we discuss this case this morning. First is that Mr. Klein did indeed receive an implant of a DePuy prosthetic hip product into his left hip on September 4, 1998. And we will certainly not contest the fact that Mr. Klein and his wife have remained residents of the state of North Carolina from the time he received this hip product until throughout the course of this litigation. Second critical fact is that in May of 2005, Mr. Klein was advised that this hip prosthetic device was prematurely failing and was causing what is known as a progressive disease of osteolysis. The third relevant point for consideration this morning, Your Honors, is that on August 15, 2005, 6 years and 11 months after Mr. Klein originally received that hip implant product, suit was commenced in the Northern District of Indiana, Fort Wayne Division.
I just can't help having the feeling, looking at this case, that if the shoe were on the other foot, so to speak, and North Carolina had the 10-year statute of repose and Indiana the six, that your position wouldn't be vigorously argued that it's North Carolina law that applies here.
It would be foolhardy for me, Your Honor, to say anything but that. Indeed, Your Honors, as we examined this particular case and we looked at what the challenges might be facing us both in North Carolina and Indiana, we certainly are presenting the argument this morning that Indiana law should apply and have cited to this Court a variety of cases that would support that position. But we are also wise enough to take under consideration the fact that if North Carolina law applies, we have presented that second question.
I understand you'd want an exception to the statute if the North Carolina law does apply, but it does seem in the district judge's defense here, if you're trying to figure out which law to apply, that North Carolina has much more of an interest in this case than does Indiana. But that, I mean, that's just the way I see it. Now, I might be wrong in looking at it that way. But
I understand, Your Honor. We would point specifically, if we examine the question of the Indiana choice of law, we would point to some specific facts. That being, this is a products liability question. It's a question about how this product was designed. It's a question about how this product was manufactured. It's a question of how this product may have even been delivered to the appellant in North Carolina. But this is a question about all those decision-making processes and the physical manifestation of that product, and that those issues were controlled by the decision-makers in Warsaw, Indiana, that being the home of DePuy Incorporated. So in looking at the facts, Your Honor, we realize that this is a difficult argument for us to assert, and we are certainly mindful of this Court's decision in Bridgestone-Firestone in 2002, in which this Court specifically looked at the Indiana case we cited to, Hubbard v. Giessen, and this Court found in that Bridgestone-Firestone case that indeed not one single court had utilized Hubbard v. Giessen to avoid the lex loci delecti concept. But, Your Honors, also contained in that Hubbard decision was the fact that the lex loci presumption is not conclusive. And therefore, Your Honors, we are asking you to make a review of this fact de novo and determine that, first, that the place of the wrong in this particular case does not bear a significant connection to where its cause was. Again, the cause being the product, the manufacturing, the design, the decision-making processes that occurred in Indiana, that that's the cause, Your Honors. We certainly cannot avoid the fact that the ultimate harm was found in North Carolina. But if you look at least what the Indiana Supreme Court has offered by way to this court as guidance, that this presumption that the place of the wrong governs can be a rebuttable presumption and is certainly not conclusive. Further, Your Honors, if we reach beyond the decisions of Hubbard v. Giessen, there is also at least a vein of cases coming out of Indiana, starting with Maroon v. State Department of Mental Health, in which the Indiana courts have simply said that we will not necessarily steadfastly apply the question of lex loci delicti if the place of the wrong would, or that the application of a sister state's law would offend public policy. Again, Your Honors, we're extremely mindful of the fact that each state has its opportunities to make its own legislative determinations, but we would submit that the 10-year statute of repose in Indiana versus the 6-year statute of repose in North Carolina, half again as much in Indiana, that the North Carolina statute of repose, at least to the citizens of Indiana, would offend that basic public policy in 6 years versus 10 years. Your Honors, we simply would submit to this court that you do have discretion under both Hubbard and that you do have an opportunity to review a public policy exception in the choice of law. But in the alternative, Your Honors, if we look to the second question, should this court indeed make the presumption that North Carolina choice of law applies? The appellants would submit that the North Carolina 6-year statute of repose does not apply to the product liability case in which a disease is the resulting harm. Again, we're asking this court to make a de novo review of this particular matter, and we also specifically would like this court to make a finding consistent with both the North Carolina Supreme Court and four separate Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals panels, all finding that there is a disease exception in North Carolina's statute of repose.
But not the statute of repose that's at issue in this case.
Correct, Your Honor. If you look at the seminal case that is the departure point, Wilder versus Amatex Corporation, that being the North Carolina Supreme Court decision, that case looked at a version of the general statute 1-15B. But if you look to the case of Heyer versus Pittsburgh Corning Corporation, the first Fourth Circuit case that took this matter under advisement, the Fourth Circuit specifically looked and raised the issue of 1-15B, and it was faced with its predecessor statute, or I'm sorry, with the subsequent statute, 1-50(6).
Also not a products liability statute of repose.
The 1-15B contained a repose provision, but certainly not as on point as 1-50(6).
There isn't any North Carolina or Fourth Circuit precedent on the statute that's implicated in this case, as I understand it. Is that correct?
I would not say that, Your Honor. I would say that the higher progeny 1-50(6) and its progeny, I'll address 1-50(6), which is here. If Your Honor is referring to 1-52(16),
okay,
that is a much more difficult argument for us, Your Honors. 1-52(16), which is clearly referenced by the lower court and is ably argued by appellees, is believed to be the successor statute. But, Your Honors, what I can only point to is this. Number one, Heyer versus Pittsburgh Corning Corporation again specifically raised the issue of 1-15(b). It then turned and looked at the statute before it at that time, 1-50(6), which is the statute that this court is faced with today. Under Heyer and its progenies, each addressing 1-50(6), each time finding that 1-15(b) was the predecessor.
Okay. Let's talk about that Wilder case from the North Carolina Supreme Court, which addressed what I read as not a statute of limitations, but an accrual rule, a discovery rule, essentially, a codification of a discovery rule, and a statute of repose, and adopted a disease exception and did so without addressing the implications for the statute of repose, focused exclusively on the issue of when a disease claim accrues, and that really wasn't relevant to the issue of whether the statute of repose applies and whether there should be any exceptions to the statute of repose. And statutes of repose, you know, by their very nature, don't admit of any exceptions. They are rigid and for a reason. So I question whether the North Carolina Supreme Court would even follow its own precedent in that regard because the decision is so badly reasoned.
Well, Your Honor, I would start with this. First of all, that matter was before that particular North Carolina Supreme Court questioning the statute of repose issue specifically. It was not
necessarily... Well, it's because the repose provision is in the same subsection that contains the discovery rule, but the discovery rule wasn't really the issue in that case, because if the court had simply applied the statutory discovery rule to the circumstances of the case, it was a disease case, that would answer the question of when a disease claim accrues. It accrues when it's discovered, that is, when it's diagnosed. The real question is whether it's foreclosed by the statute of repose, and the court didn't even address that, just said this statute doesn't apply to disease claims. That's the end of the question, and the dissent in that case ably pointed out the flaws in the analysis.
And, Your Honor,
I tend to believe that the dissent's preview would prevail if the court were presented with the question now.
Certainly, Your Honors, but I would certainly point this court to the consideration made with regard to the legislative intent behind 1-15B. And particularly, because it is at this point probably the best argument that I can present to you, which is the legislative intent, since it's clear the court disagrees with the decision-making as it might relate to today's case before this court. So I would look to the legislative intent of the North Carolina legislature, in which specifically, if you look at 1-15B, and again, we have to make the presumption, or at least the argument upon which I'm presenting to you, is that 1-50...
Actually, counsel, let me stop you. If you're going to make a legislative intent argument, you should be addressing the products liability statute and the legislative intent behind that.
And, Your Honors, I would say that it builds on that decision out of Wilder, and it builds on the legislative intent out of Wilder.
Is there any evidence that the two are connected in terms of legislative history, anything like that?
No, Your Honors. In fact, we would be deficient on that point. There's absolutely nothing, and I can tell you that certainly an exhaustive search was undertaken in an effort to determine that. And so we simply have to then not only look at the Wilder decision, but we're left faced with the predictive precedent coming out of the Fourth Circuit. Again, the Fourth Circuit revisits exactly the issue that Your Honor is concerned about with regard to what is the legislative intent here. And I would not say that the Fourth Circuit gave it short shrift in its considerations, but it certainly took the Wilder case, and we cannot deny that it extrapolates on the Wilder case that it applies to 1-50(6). But, Your Honors, I would certainly submit that the Fourth Circuit undertook a careful and thorough analysis. Whether it is flawed or not, as the lower court says, is the reason why we're here today. But I certainly don't think it would be fair to the Fourth Circuit to make an argument that they've in some way given short shrift to the considerations here. But indeed, Your Honors, the legislative intent behind 1-15(b) was clearly what was addressed in Wilder and has clearly been considered by the Fourth Circuit, but neither the Fourth Circuit nor our exhaustive research have given us any indication as to what the legislative intent history was that we had before us in 1-15(b).
Well, and there certainly is nothing on the face of the statute of repose that applies here, the one that applies to products liability claims. There's nothing on the face of the statute that would indicate that it has any exceptions for disease claims or any other claim.
And indeed, Your Honor, we are therefore forced back to look at what the decisions were in Wilder and 1-15(b), in which the court undertook an analysis which said, because it was mentioned in the first versions and the second versions and the third versions, and then the absence of it in its final version is an indication that the North Carolina legislature did not intend for there to be a disease, or that it did intend for there to be a disease exception.
For that line of statutes, though, we've got a statute that's out of that line.
I understand that, Your Honor. And again, we're looking at what is the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, and what we would ask this court to do is consider the predictive precedent that has been established by the Fourth Circuit. We certainly cannot, as we have already said, Your Honor, look at the legislative history is certainly troubling, at least the lack of it. But let me say this. As we examine 1-50(6), which is before this court's consideration, we took note of the fact that the North Carolina legislature has revisited this portion of the statute on four separate occasions. And despite the existence of Wilder from 22 years ago, and despite the existence of Heyer and its 21 years of history, and actually the following of the Heyer progeny up at least through 1996, not once has the North Carolina legislature undertaken an effort to purportedly correct or revise what at least is being portrayed by both the lower court and is by able counsel for appellees as an error in the assessment made by the North Carolina Supreme Court. Your Honors, we would ask that you reverse and remand this particular issue. Thank you.
Mr. Rusthoven.
Thank you, Your Honors. With me is my partner, Mr. Connor, who works regularly for DePue. Thank my colleague for her able presentation here and below and cooperative approach throughout. I think she, and I mean it's not in any patronizing, I think it's a difficult case for reasons that I will get into. The choice of law issue I will not spend too much time on, basically because Indiana's decided this. The Indiana rule is we do lex loci delicti, the last act giving rise to the complaint unless the contacts with that state are insignificant. Here we have two plaintiffs who are North Carolina residents. We have the surgery, the initial and replacement surgeries performed in North Carolina in a North Carolina hospital by a North Carolina physician, and with the plaintiffs alleging that all the medical treatment continued in North Carolina. The cases in our briefs, I think, are very clear on this. The one case that is unmentioned by my colleague in her briefing or here is a products liability case that addresses the very issue she attempts to raise to this court, which is Ali v. Eli Lilly and Company, decided by the Indiana Court of Appeals last year. That was a products liability case, particularly against an Indiana manufacturer, in that case Lilly, alleging a defect in the product, in that case Prozac, where you had a Michigan resident who, having had it prescribed by a Michigan doctor, taking the medicine in Michigan, committing suicide in Michigan, injuries suffered in Michigan by his family, and the Indiana Supreme Court of Appeals, applying Indiana Supreme Court precedent, said this is a Michigan case in terms of Indiana choice of law. These are not insignificant. Specifically rejected the argument that some public policy, because Indiana, in that case, not surprisingly, this is what lawyers do, Indiana law would not have barred the action. Michigan law, having to do with product liability actions against drug manufacturers, did bar the action. The Court of Appeals of Indiana just last year specifically found this does not violate public policy in Indiana. The fact that people have different rules, it said we're going to confine public policy to things like degrees of consanguinity for improper marriages and the like. We're not talking about different rules for when actions are or are not barred. I think the cases are clear. This court has made clear in its following of the Hubbard case that, you know, unless it's insignificant with the other state, analysis is over. We don't even get into the balancing or the other types of things invited by my distinguished colleague. The North Carolina repose issue is understandably a bit confused because, as Your Honor pointed out, there are two statutes here. And my colleague's opening advocacy got a little bit the better of accuracy in saying that the North Carolina Supreme Court has ruled. North Carolina Supreme Court has never ruled on this issue with respect to the products liability statute. It ruled on an earlier statute, and it ruled on bases that have nothing to do with the operation of a statute of repose.
Actually, I think we've got three statutes implicated here, which is why I'm having some difficulty grappling with this. The statute that was at issue in Wilder is this 1-15
correct
sub B, which is a general accrual rule, general discovery rule applicable to
personal
tort
injury.
Actions.
Correct.
I think both beyond personal injury, doesn't it? Or is it just personal injury?
Just personal injury, I think, Your Honor.
And that also contains in the same subsection the statute of repose, generally applicable. Then that's repealed and replaced and renumbered and becomes 1-52 sub 16. A little different language, but the same concept. Discovery
right.
rule, statute of repose. And has I misspoke earlier, has that statute ever been construed by the North Carolina Supreme Court or the Fourth Circuit?
The 1-52?
Right.
The successor statute,
the successor
if you will,
statute,
to what we have called the accrual. I do not know whether that's been construed by the Fourth Circuit or the North Carolina Supreme Court.
So do we know whether this disease exception has been perpetuated beyond the statute that was at issue in Wilder, which is no longer on the books?
What we know is this, that the North Carolina Supreme Court has never, nor has any reported North Carolina state decision, adopted a disease exception to the product liability statute. That we know. With respect to the other statute, we respectfully contend, submit, it makes no difference to the outcome of this case, and if I could explain why.
Mm-hmm.
The statute involved in Wilder had two components. Its main component, if you will, was when does a cause of action accrue for purposes of personal injury actions. At the end of it, it had any cause of action covered by this has to be brought within 10 years anyway. So there's sort of a repose provision at the very end. But the analysis in Wilder has to do with when does this personal injury action accrue? And the background of this is two things. First of all, you had a kind of, before the statute, you had a rule that if there's any kind of injury at all, the statute starts running on a personal injury. And the legislature was trying to candidly liberalized that by adopting a kind of discovery rule. The other thing you had in the background was that the legislature and the North Carolina courts already had a policy about disease cases, which said, no, for disease claims, the action only starts accruing when it's first diagnosed, because who knows when the first impact may have been. That's the background. What does the North Carolina Supreme Court face in Wilder? Does this new statute adopting a discovery rule for personal injury claims somehow change the rule that disease claims don't start running until you're diagnosed? In other words, does this statute, which establishes a discovery rule, somehow make it harder for people with disease because you can now raise an argument, even if there hasn't been a diagnosis, that they should have discovered they were diseased? What do we know about all this? It's all limitations analysis. It all has to do when an action has accrued for purposes of the running of limitations.
But the court also eliminated the statute of repose because statutes of repose extinguish claims regardless of accrual.
This statute of repose provision here in this earlier statute, what I would call the products for the accrual statute, that is sort of a catch-all. At the very end, no matter what, this is when it's going to accrue for limitations purposes, this is how we're going to measure limitations, and then at the very end, no matter what, you can't bring it more than 10 years after the last act of a defendant. That's that statute, that's the Wilder case, has to do with personal injury, when it accrues, with a statute of repose at the end. The products liability statute is totally separate, and there is legislative history on that, as indicated by the North Carolina courts, particularly the North Carolina Supreme Court. The products liability statute says if it's an action for product liability, you bring it within 6 years, that's it. No accrual concept at all. No disease exception, because a disease exception is, it's all bound up in what is accrual. It doesn't matter for statute of repose purposes. And the North Carolina Supreme Court, in the cases that we have cited in our briefs, says the purpose of this is to protect manufacturers. They're balancing, it's part of a product liability reform, and our legislative judgment is after 6 years from the date something is first purchased or put in use, no action, period. North Carolina cases say it does not matter if the cause of action has not accrued. North Carolina Supreme Court cases, it does not matter if the plaintiff hasn't suffered injury yet.
That's always the case with a statute of repose.
Exactly. So we have a products liability statute of repose.
And if that's the rule, then Wilder was wrongly decided.
Your Honor, I think you can decide in the Wilder case, I don't think you have to go, you do not have to go after the North Carolina Supreme Court in Wilder for purposes of this case. Because the Wilder case is deciding that for purposes of accrual under this particular statute, there is a disease exception, and there was legislative history there. In that statute, disease was in the statute and then out of the statute in the legislature. So there was something to look at. What you do know, because of the nature of statutes of repose and the statute of repose here, which has nothing to do with that legislative history and nothing to do with disease, you know that the decision about statute one, the accrual statute, has nothing to do with statute two. Nothing to do with statute two. And no North Carolina Supreme Court has even cited the Fourth Circuit cases. Let's talk about those cases. There's really only one that talks about it, which is the Heyer case. It doesn't spend much time on it. It just says, well, given what the North Carolina Supreme Court held about this statute over here, we think it would hold the same thing about this other statute. No analysis of the accrual issues involved, no analysis of the legislative history of the earlier statute, no recognition that these are totally different statutes. The other cases, you have one Fourth Circuit case decided the same day, which simply says, we decided this over here. You have another Fourth Circuit case decided a month later that said, oh, we decided this a month ago. You have one final Fourth Circuit case 10 years later that says in footnote, oh, we decided this before. Not one of those cases has even begun to undertake the kind of careful analysis that the district court did here. The district court here actually took a look at the kinds of things we've been talking about. It says, oh, this is a different statute. This is a statute addressing accrual under an accrual has nothing to do with what's going on here under the product liability statute. The product liability statute, when I look at the North Carolina Supreme Court cases, they say an absolute and unyielding barrier. They say it does not matter if the action has accrued. They say it does not matter if the plaintiff has been injured. This is a products liability statute. His purpose is to protect manufacturers after a certain period of time. So we have a case where it would have been easy for Judge Springland to say, well, I have a Fourth Circuit case that said this 20 years ago, so I guess that's what North Carolina law has to be. Instead, Judge Springland actually looked at the North Carolina cases, actually looked at the Fourth Circuit, and I'm not criticizing them, but in this case, not particularly in-depth analysis, and said that's not correct. I think it is significant that in the 20 years since Heyer was decided by the Fourth Circuit, it's never been cited by a single North Carolina case. Not once. None of the three other cases, which are all just sort of, we decided that, we decided that, we decided that, no independent analysis, none of those cases has ever been cited in North Carolina. There is, this court is not bound, it's bound to respect its sister circuits, but as it said in the Acheson case, that doesn't mean we don't do our own independent analysis.
Did you take a look at any, to the extent it exists, more current North Carolina Supreme Court case law on how it treats other statutes of repose and whether it generally gives them effect or
I think, Your Honor,
not?
The cases we've looked at are in our briefing.
The product cases.
In the product cases, there is no... I will venture into something outside the record and ask the court to look at how lawyers operate, if I may. If I am bringing a product liability case in North Carolina and have my choice whether to sue in state court or federal court, in light of the Heyer case, where do you think I'm going to be suing if I'm a plaintiff? I think that that's part of what may be going on in the state of North Carolina right now. I'm not making representations. I'm just asking you to think the way lawyers think as they decide where to bring cases. There are several Supreme Court cases in the state of North Carolina about the product statute, all of which indicate it's absolute. Absolute and unyielding barrier, courts try to, you know, courts are not as bad as advocates about adverbs and adjectives, but that's pretty clear. Absolute and unyielding. Doesn't matter if it's accrued. Okay, it doesn't matter if it's accrued. What's a disease exception about? Whether I could have discovered for purposes of limitations analysis that I had a cause of action. That has nothing to do with repose, everything to do with accrual. The statute of repose runs whether or not the plaintiff has suffered injury. That's North Carolina Supreme Court and Court of Appeals reported decisions about this statute. Would that ever apply to limitations? Let's see. Limitations is run although this plaintiff has not even yet been injured. Of course not. A disease exception focuses solely on discovery and accrual concepts that have nothing to do with repose. The only thing that has injected confusion here is if this first statute did not have this little tag in at the end, a sort of repose on top of everything else, there'd be no confusion at all. The first statute was all about accrual. When does a cause of action accrue for purposes of a personal injury case? North Carolina in the statute adopted a discovery rule. Supreme Court of North Carolina said in doing that, we weren't changing the rule under which for a disease you first had to be diagnosed. All about limitations. There's no issue in that Wilder case about the statute of repose provision at the end.
Well, sure there is. It's just the court didn't address it.
No,
because
it
the court
didn't.
Refused to give effect to the statute of repose in that case, which otherwise would have extinguished the plaintiff's claim.
I'm not going to argue with Your Honor. I have some problems with that decision as well. I understand what you're talking about. What it did not do is hold. It certainly did not hold that in North Carolina, a statute of repose does not run in a disease case. That's the only issue here. That's the only issue here. It certainly did not hold that this disease exception applies in that case. I thank the court for its attention. I think the choice, to summarize, the choice of law issue I think is straightforward and is decided by Indiana cases. Judge Springman did a remarkable job of actually looking at cases and respectfully, not flippantly, but respectfully saying, 21 years ago the Fourth Circuit got this particular issue wrong. And the Supreme Court of North Carolina has indicated what it thinks of this products liability statute of repose, and that's what we have here. Thank you for your kind attention in a somewhat complicated case.
Ms. Kranz.
Your Honors, dare I tread back into the Wilder opinion? But let me say this. As the Wilder court indicated, diseases present an intrinsically different kind of claim. If nothing else is fundamental to that opinion, it certainly comes out clear. And that is something that is reiterated by the Fourth Circuit. And I would note that in the higher decision, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals specifically withheld its decision pending the outcome of the Wilder case. In fact, it was specifically noted it allocated additional time to appellees and appellants following the Wilder decision. Why do I raise that? For this simple issue, Your Honors. We certainly have a question as to what the legislative intent here was, what statutes you're being asked to look at today. But the brethren in the Fourth Circuit have said 1-50 paren 6, which this court is faced with today, that the North Carolina Supreme Court has said that a disease is not within the considerations of the statute of repose. The Fourth Circuit in Heyer, in Silver, in Guy, and ultimately in Bullard gave an indication of what they felt the statute would be interpreted under North Carolina law. And, Your Honors, we would ask you to consider indeed the predictive precedent that has been established by the Fourth Circuit. Four separate panels of the Fourth Circuit, totaling 9 judges because 3 judges sat on 2 panels. 6 out of the 7 justices of the North Carolina Supreme Court, and ultimately the North Carolina legislature over the last 22 years, have made no efforts and no considerations with regard to changing this repose question that you are faced with today. Your Honors, we would simply submit this. First of all, we do feel that there are adequate facts to support a potential at least consideration of the application of Indiana law and the 10-year statute. But in the alternative, Your Honors, that the North Carolina law recognizes this disease exception for the product liability statute of repose, and we would ask this court to follow the predictive precedent that has been handed down by the Fourth Circuit. Your Honors, we would ask that you reverse and remand this matter for further proceedings before the lower court.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to both counsel for the excellent presentations here. We'll take the case under advisement.